Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Driving and More Show. Hi, I'm Paul. I'll be your host this evening, and it looks like it's going to be a solo show. You'll not be joining me yet. Hopefully, Mr. Harris will be joining me in a moment. As you can probably tell, for those of you on the live feed, the camera quality is a bit of a mess. So I'm sorry, folks. I've been dashing around trying to get the cameras to work, and clearly I have failed. So we're running off the laptop camera this evening, which makes it look, someone once said, why are you videoing it through a potato? So yes, not a very good quality camera to what we normally use. I'm sorry about that, folks. I had some technical issues and can't get either of the other cameras to work. And I'm going to unplug it so it stops flashing in my face. But you probably couldn't see that. But it is awfully distracting for me. So yes, what do we get up to at the weekend? Well, we had Farrer Palmer Cup, which I must admit I've not caught up on, I'm afraid, folks. All been a bit of a what's the word I'm looking for? Hectic weekend for me, which I'll explain in a second. But we also did have the latest round of the NPC and some action. I got to a couple of games there for that one. So I was at Waikato versus Auckland, and also at Counties versus Manawa 2. So, and I've got post-match interviews from both of those games. I don't think I've named them, so it's going to be a bit of potluck as to which ones I pull up. But we will go through those ones, say some cracking interviews there with that lot. So we'll catch up with those as we talk about that. We'll have a look forward to the, to the internationals as well, because they're midweek this week. Any other kind of hot news that is out there. So, thank you so much for joining me in the live feed. Of course, you can join us at 8 p.m. every Monday. Well, I say that because we're actually going to change this from a Monday to a Tuesday, folks, from next week. So from next week, the Driving More Show will be on a Tuesday night at 8 p.m. and the Standoff Show will stay in its normal slot of a Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Due to mostly changes in my life at the moment, and I'll be busy working on a Monday, and obviously away from home on Monday nights, working. Getting yourselves lined up for what's the word I'm looking for. I've gone black Christmas and making stables, toy stables is what I do in the rest of my time. I'll talk about and watching rugby. So that's what we are up to. That's what I'm up to, folks, around it. And I've waffled enough, but Stephen still hasn't joined us, or El Boa or anyone else. So hopefully we'll see if anyone does join me. Join this one, otherwise it could be a bit of a quickish kind of show. Catching up then on those Farrer Palmer Cup results, as I have not seen these ones, but Otago Spirit hosted Hawke's Bay, and that finished 20-24, so a close one there in that one. Congratulations to Hawke's Bay, who managed to gets it, managed to win the final there after losing during the regular season to Otago Spirit. Otago came through, won every single game during the regular season, so beat all the other teams, including beating Hawke's Bay 22-44 in the opening round of the competition, but couldn't do enough at the end. So Hawke's Bay will be the team that gets promoted. Really tough on Otago, who I say had the perfect season, 5 wins from 5 games during the regular season, with a points difference of 139. So yes, cracking season from them, just come short in that final game. The old arguments as to whether you should have finals in a league competition, but I think we've gone past that one, haven't we? Let's be honest. Good evening to Simon, who's bringing us up to speed on the European Super Cup tournament with a couple of new teams. Tel Aviv Heat have been hiring some players in from overseas there in that one. So congratulations to the win over Romanian Wolves. And then Batum RC against Georgia Black Lion, 3-29. So clearly good one for Georgia there. So that was the from the championship to well, we'll see if they do have promotion and relegation next year with that one. In the Premiership, Manawatu 2, if there is a relegation, are the team that will go down on that one. And the final was a repeat of the final from last year with Canterbury versus Waikato. Waikato won. This year, Auckland Storm had beaten Waikato in the semi-finals. And so it's Canterbury versus Auckland Storm, and a comfortable win for Canterbury. 41-14 over Auckland there in the Farrah Palmer Cup. Obviously bringing a close to Kendra Cox's, domestic career. So massive congratulations to her, and a great way to go out on a high. Good evening, Mr. Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good evening, Paul. My apologies to you and your audience.
We're really having technical issues this evening. It's been an absolute disaster. So Stephen will go away and try and figure out how to provide sound because, as I say, he's not on mute by the looking at the settings. But we have no sound coming through his microphone. Stephen, take two.
And I'll come back to you very shortly.
Oh, silent. So never mind. Oh, dear. So he'll have to go away. Probably drop out, reboot his computer, come back in again. Hopefully we'll have Stephen joining us with sound at some point. Because sound, I think, is one of those things that's really important for a podcast. Never mind a live stream. So there we go. So folks, find us 8 p.m. from Tuesdays from now on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. The search New Zealand Sport Radio. It's at Driving Mall on Twitter. Also the podcast, New Zealand Sport Radio, as well. So do check those if you want to listen to us on the go. So that brings to a close the Farrah Palmer Cup. And obviously, things will now turn to the international side of the women's game with the Rugby World Cup coming up, kicking off on the 8th of October, with South Africa against France in that opening game there on that one. That will be on Spark Sport, folks, because rather than on Sky. At the weekend, there was one game. Italy beat France 26-19, reversing the 21-0. Result from the previous weekend. I'll be honest, I don't know how selection went on these ones and whether one side sort of rested or whatever players. But good win for Italy there over France. I think you'll find that Italy will be much more competitive than their men's team, even if with Italy picking up 2 wins during the women's Six Nations to finish 5th there. Wales, Ireland, Italy all got 2 wins and 3 losses as teams beat each other. Try again with Mr. Stephen Harris.
Take two. Hopefully you can hear me.
Disaster. No, still silent. So I've got no idea what's going on tonight. Oh, dear. I'm not sure what we can do there, folks. As I say, a bit of a disaster this evening. Simon lets us know that the Black Ferns games will be on delayed on free-to-air TV3 for the Rugby World Cup. Scotland versus Spain was postponed due to the passing of the Queen there at the weekend. Coming up, England will play Wales on Thursday at 6 a.m. in the morning. Also, it'll be a Wednesday night game over in the UK there. And New Zealand women have got one more game before the Rugby World Cup up against Japan. Talking of Rugby World Cups, we had the Sevens World Cup at the weekend. A thing that I'll be honest, I don't really follow Sevens, so I didn't keep an eye on this one. But congratulations on the men's side of things as Fiji beat New Zealand in the final 29-12. A really impressive performance by Ireland, who came third, beating Australia 19-14. So cracking result for Ireland, a country that didn't have a sevens program until recently. So there we go. We've got Stephen back again. He's going to go.
Take three.
3-2-1-0. Absolutely, there's no result at all. So he's tried different headphones, folks, for those of you who are listening to the podcast. But it's all gone a bit pear-shaped. So I'm not sure what's happened there with Stephen. So we will have to we'll get him back next week, hopefully. Because technical issues, as I say, are killing us. If he does sort of come on, he does come on. But we'll have to bash on, as they say. So on the men, that was what's happened on the men's side. So fantastic. So quite well done, Fiji. Over on the women's side, and again, New Zealand were finalists, losing out this time to Australia, 24-22. So a close one there, with France picking up the third place, beating the USA 29-7 in that one. So New Zealand coming up short just in both of them, but cracking results for the Black Ferns and the All Blacks. Look, you can't be. Aaron says we can hear Stephen. No issues. Try again, Stephen.
Yep, I can try. I can hear you, Paul.
Brilliant. See, if I turn the volume up on my computer, I can hear you.
Oh, there you go. So after all that, the issue was at your end, but that's okay.
Oh, dearie me. Sorry, folks. You've all been hearing Stephen. So, Stephen, as I've whistle-stopped through the Farrah Palmer Cup finals, did you catch any of those or any other sort of comments on that sort of thing?
Oh, listen, just a few highlights, but, you know, wonderful way for not only Kendra Coxedge to go out, but I'm just the front row of escapes me as well, who was playing. I think they were both playing their 100th. Were they both playing their 100th game, or was it pretty much their final game, Paul?
It was definitely Kendra Coxedge's final game and 100th game, I think, for Kendra. I'm not sure about if it was 100th game for the other player or not.
Yes, there was one of the Black Ferns front rowers, I think, was also maybe playing her final game for Canterbury as well. But they've probably been the benchmark for a very long time, although take into account they did get beaten in last year's final. But I always suspect they were going to be hard to beat, given what was on the line for a couple of these ladies who were playing their final games.
Yeah, and also they've got the, as you say, they've got the experience. They're there or thereabouts in every year. For so sure, they missed out last year, but they did top the table last year. Hence, they hosted that final. So even when they did lose it, they were still the number one seed. So cracking setup they've got down there in Canterbury. I does it having seen how they didn't perform in Super Rugby Aupaki, I did wonder how they would go. And whether the sort of tide had turned down there, but congratulations on that one. When was the game on? Didn't even see anything, it says Aaron. I'll quickly check on the old Tribe Sports app, which is our bible for this kind of stuff. Both games were on Saturday, and it doesn't have the time on here. It does normally, but it does when you've kind of. So I don't know. I can't remember when they were, but both games were on Saturday. I know I was sort of travelling around and heading up to watch counties on Saturday, so I didn't actually catch these because I was driving at the time.
But Paul, one thing I will say, I know that the championship was decided at the Farrah Palmer Cup. Obviously, Hawke's Bay Tui coming up with the goods. Now, I think that was a bit of a surprise to everybody because Otago had looked nigh unbeatable leading into these playoffs. They'd sort of they'd put away or disposed of everybody quite convincingly. So, you know, I thought it was really, dare I say it, a fait accompli.
Absolutely, I couldn't see past Otago winning that final. But yeah, congratulations. Yeah, I mean, fantastic result for the Hawke's Bay to pull it out in the one game that that mattered there for them. I didn't catch any of the Sevens Rugby World Cup. Did you?
No, not really. I suppose it was just on at an awkward time, and I'm not too sure if Sky were actually covering the event. So, like most people, you've just got to rely on Tribe and other reports through other avenues. So, yeah, it's a little disappointed to say the least that we didn't get their coverage. But gee, in the scheme of things, if we start with
no blame on Sky here. That's because Spark have got the World Cups.
World Cup rights. Yeah. Yep. No. Just starting with the. With the female final, because that was the first final this morning. You know, they've been, the Black Ferns have been pretty convincing up to that final, but you just felt with the Australians just seem to have the wood on the Black Ferns at this time. Some very, very good athletes in this Australian team.
Yep, absolutely. So so we'll move on from that one. Interesting. So some of the money from, it's a little new section now, some of the money from the old, not the old or the new Silver Lake deal is starting to trickle out to the, or starting to come out to the provinces and also to various rugby clubs. I have lined up an interview next week with Aaron, I've gone blank as the guy's surname, this is bad, isn't it? Who is the CEO of Counties Manukau, and we're going to ask him. I have a chat with him about what the provinces are doing with the Silver Lake money that they've received, and how the money will actually increase participation. Because if you remember, all of the talk around this was that that we need money to fund participation in New Zealand rugby, and that's what that's what needs to save the sport. Now there was a review of the or not review, I've got an audit of the deal by PricewaterhouseCoopers, who said actually, yeah, you don't need the money right now, but still, it's on there are risks. On the whole, it looks like a positive deal. So interesting there. So we'll be interesting to have a chat to him. I'll see if I can line up some of the other CEOs that we've got contacts with in the provincial unions. To have those chats about how they're intending to spend their money. Aaron Lawton, thank you very much, Stephen, in the live chat there. So we'll be see as to how that money is being spent, and that will probably come out as a supporters special, folks. If you want to become a supporter of New Zealand Sport Radio, check out the link on the screen below there, patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio. I must admit, I have not been putting out many videos for supporters only, but I say with those coming up, that's what we'll be I'll be looking at, see if I can put some of those videos together for you on that one. Now, a show I didn't see, but there's apparently been some discussion around schoolboy rugby, and apparently New Zealand Rugby is having a look at that. Stephen, I mean, schoolboy rugby, look, a Lawrence of their own. I think it's probably how it's been historically and how it is currently. We've seen various things come out by New Zealand Rugby about making the game safer for the community and for youth levels, those ones have come out with it's optional for first 15 on the grounds that essentially those schools will turn around and go, no, we're not doing it anyway. If New Zealand Rugby did try to impose those laws on the schools. So Stephen, are you happy with the New Zealand Rugby, or are you happy with how school Boy Rugby is currently in. Is that up in New Zealand, or do you think it does need a little bit of a review?
Oh, listen, Paul, it's almost a case of the train has well and truly on the way to Timbuktu, and it left a long time ago. If you know what I mean, don't worry, I won't quote the honey badger joke about Timbuktu, but I think it's just a little late in the piece. I think something could have been done quite a long ago. I think this has been identified as a problem for a very long time, and you'll probably find a lot of these schools who have got academies, you know, they realize they've got access to funding. If they can get more funding into the school, that means they can attract more students to the school, offer out scholarships, etc. So it's going to take a heck of a change, but you certainly can't go in there with an attitude of empowerment. I think it's you've got to go in with an attitude of sharing, Paul. You know, what can we do to basically help your school to improve the numbers that are actually playing the game, and you can maybe utilize, say, for example, become a conduit with a local rugby club and get those kids involved, especially for the ones who have basically decided, you know, I can't make first 15. I'm certainly not going to probably look at this as a income, you know, as some way of getting an income moving forward. But you want to try and keep those kids in the game somehow, some way, both male and female.
Yeah, not to mention school rugby is bad for male participation, just marketing for schools, not the game and players. And it is for probably about 10 schools throughout the country, or slightly more than that. And then for everyone else, I think it's kind of something that they don't have academies for, and it's more just about trying to have it as a sport amongst other sports for the kids at that school. Obviously, rugby being the biggest sport historically in New Zealand. So it's funny, isn't it, that we caught up on Sunday for a coffee. You, myself, and Ashwin as well. And one of the things we talked about was schoolboy rugby and how, well, not schoolboy rugby, but school rugby, actually, because we were talking about schoolboy and school girl rugby, and how the provinces, provincial unions, needed to get rugby development officers in the schools, make sure that there is a boys and a girls team at every age grade, so that we have got that supply of players coming into club rugby, both male and female, to keep those clubs with high participation rates, keep them active and growing. So funny that topics we were talking about at the weekend were brought up and talked about on TV the following day. Maybe they've got spy devices, and they've been eavesdropping on us, Steve.
Yeah, that was really crazy. That gave me a little bit of a shock that subject should actually pop up after we had sort of previously spoken about it. Yeah, it's a real interesting one. I think one of the problems that we probably do have is just having the volunteers. Once upon a time, you had from a lot of the teaching people who were involved in teaching also had an interest in rugby. I don't know if they have that same interest in anymore. You're a lot more pressure on teachers. And I think if the rugby union took that approach of, hey, we're here to actually support your school, you know, we don't, you know, especially with those teachers that got more of a concentration on the tertiary side of education as opposed to sport, I actually think that's the way to go.
Yeah, on the academic side rather than tertiary side, but yes, I know what you mean there. I think the days of volunteers are key to the game, folks, don't get me wrong. But I think those volunteers need to be backed up with paid people who can make it as easy as possible for those volunteers, and clubs need to, and also can make sure that there is a number of volunteers rather than having one volunteer doing all the work at a club, because that will just burn them out and collapse. So I think, yes, having a paid for rugby development officer by the provincial union or by the local club. And if you build up the numbers of players at the clubs and they get their fees, their subs each year, then if they build up that income stream, then the clubs can afford to have a rugby development officer that works with the school to provide that flow of players, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is our self-fulfilling system, which is what I think we need to do. But we'll see how that happens. Society has changed a lot since Rogernomics. Time is rare and community is weakened. Yeah, and we can either say, yes, that's what it is, and just throw up our hands and go, it's impossible to deal with, or we can look at how do we try and re-strengthen those, and how do we work with the situation that it is and try and make it as strong as possible. So, that to me is how you got to look at it.
Yeah, Paul, also, you know, there's a real issue with truancy in New Zealand, where obviously a lot of children not attending classes, so maybe there's an opportunity also to push them into a bit of sport as well, and you know, get them moving, get them feeling good about themselves, and you know, maybe it can help to put some kids back on track as well.
Yep, not sure. Yeah, weekend work takes a lot of club players out of the game. Yep, it does, absolutely. So one of the problems that a club like Waihi, which is my local club, has is that it's a mining town. So people, if you look at the makeup of the players, on the whole, they are either tradies, farmers, or miners. Now the miners, they work 7 days on, 7 days off shifts, and so hence they can only play every other weekend. Similar sort of thing has a problem for Cobras Te Aroha in the Thames Valley region, where they've got the meatworks. And again, the meatworks runs has shifts running through the weekend. So again, players only available every other week. So there are problems there. And I think that it's, if you are a rugby club, then, and one of your major employers in the town is one of those sort of companies, you've got to try and work with them. And again, so say, hey, look, it's good for the community, it's good for your standing in the community if you release players, and we can sort of make a little bit of a song and dance and say thank you once or twice a season, via our social media pieces, or whatever. So there's ways of working with those companies there. But yes, it definitely times have changed. It's not a 9 to 5 Monday to Friday work week for everybody, and rugby's going to move with that. So do we also have a midweek league and a weekend league? Do some provinces run two leagues like that to accommodate some weekend workers as well? So maybe there are different ways around this, rather than just trying to say rugby has to be played at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and that's when it is, and that's when it will be. Maybe there needs to be a bit more thinking outside the box, using a bit of blue sky thinking to brainstorm this, but make sure we don't boil the ocean.
I like that idea, Paul. You know, who said that club rugby has to kick off at, you're right, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon? Can it be a Sunday, or can it be a Friday evening, so you can maybe free the weekends up? I know, maybe, you know, a lot of people might say, well, it's a little bit difficult Friday, it's late after the work, but I think your first important caller have got to be for the people that you've got playing the game. What's convenient to them?
Absolutely. And you say it's whilst it's late after work for some people, for other people, it's their day off. So it's a bit of swings and roundabouts, yeah, on those sort of things. The final bit of sort of news that I want to talk about is we had a minute's silence at all the games over the weekend, or a moment's silence over the weekend, not just for Her Majesty the Queen, Queen Elizabeth of England, but also for a certain player called Willie, ex-player, international and commentator called Willie Luce, who has been involved and part of the game here in New Zealand and around the world for many years. He's been on the Seventh Circuit as a commentator, so a lot of people around the world will recognise his voice, not just us here in New Zealand. So sad to hear about his sudden passing over in South Africa, where he was there to work as a commentator on the Sevens Rugby World Cup. I've had met Willie a couple of times. You see, there's a jersey there, a framed signed jersey behind me. That framed jersey is the Aliens rugby team from the Hong Kong Tens back in, which year was it? Back in 2009. And Willie Luce, along with an ex-Canadian national player, who I must admit, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name now, used to take a team to the Hong Kong Tens, which is a tournament that happened around happened the week before the Hong Kong Sevens, and he would take a bunch of fringe Super Rugby or young players, and give them this experience overseas. Would get sponsorship and stuff so that they could do it for free. So there would be NPC or fringe Super Rugby players. So great to see that a man who was very much part of rugby. Yes, he had the public piece and made a living out of it, but also he gave back via things like that Hong Kong Tens, sort of like that team he took to the Hong Kong Tens. Obviously, he was there to then commentate afterwards on the Sevens. But a great rugby guy. Played for Tonga at the Rugby World Cup, and real sad to see a man go far too early in his life soon.
Oh, listen, very much so. When this news came through, it was very much a shock. I'd sort of known Willie for over 30 years, and that's primarily I'd first heard of him at Kelston Boys, which is literally a stone's throw from where I'm sitting down doing this show. I'd seen Willie as a lock loose forward who was also the skipper of Kelston Boys, but went on to play for the New Zealand secondary schools, New Zealand under 21 in 1988. And of course, he progressed on to having played for Waitemata Premiers between 90 and 93, but also progressed on to playing for both Auckland during that time. And he moved to Harbour, played for East Coast Bays on the North Shore, and duly represented North Harbour on 17 occasions. And he actually had one game for Marlborough as well, and that was in 2001, and I think that was pretty much after his overseas stints that he had. And he had three overseas stints, two in Italy between 89 and 90. That was Rugby Prato and also Messina Rugby 1992 to 1993. But of course, he etched out most of his career at Yamaha in Japan between 96 and 2001, where he basically met his future wife. They had a couple of children, and he also speaks fluent Japanese very, very well. Well, did speak fluent Japanese very well. So very, very talented guy. I was fortunate enough also during those times to work with him at Coca-Cola, and he certainly was the life. He certainly lit up a room when he walked into it. And let's not forget, you're right, he captained Tonga at the 1995 World Cup. So in the grand scheme of things, not a bad sort of CV pool, when you think about it. And then you think about his broadcasting career and where that's taken him around the world. Boy, that's a lot to pack in 55 years. But gone far, far too soon. Gone far, far too soon, I should say. And our thoughts and prayers are with Willie's whānau and friends. And listen, I'm just down the road from their old homestead as well, which I passed yesterday. And you can just see that the masses are starting to gather at this time. And there's a lot of people hurting at the moment, Paul, and not just myself, but many other people across the rugby. Obviously touched a lot of people as well.
There's a little point for people who are from overseas, or you have overseas. This is Marlborough is a province that has rolled up into Tasman nowadays. Merged with Nelson, I guess. Was it Nelson? No, hang on.
Marlborough, Nelson, and they became Tasman. Who knew?
So there you go, folks. So I won that jersey at an auction they were able to help fundraise for that. For that team and that we lose there as well. Then and bumped into him when I worked at Sky for a short while in the IT department. Said hi to him there. So very sad. Moving on then to the NPC that happened at the weekend. I was on Friday night. I got along to Waikato versus Auckland. Finished 30-15, and boy, oh boy, this was a bit of a strange game, really. In the second half was a very poor performance by Auckland, who collectively, and look, I'm sure, and all the players put in the effort. They were all trying to win. Don't get me wrong. All players always do. So when people say, "Oh, they didn't look interested," players are always interested and trying their best. On the vast majority of occasions. What came across in this one is that Auckland just seemed to press the self-destruct button in that second half. Whilst individual players were making some timely intercepts or charging back and making tackles, too many times they were just knocked on balls and losing possession and giving Waikato opportunities. Waikato should, if they've been on a good night, have knocked over at least 50 points. So this wasn't a vintage performance by Waikato, but it does mean that they are still undefeated, Stephen, in this competition, and are tracking very well.
Oh, listen, Paul, if anything, they're showing that last year's title win was no fluke, despite three teams not being there and locked out by COVID. But I think the big thing for me comes back to connection. Waikato looked like they had connection. You know, whenever there was turnover ball, they moved that ball very quickly. They moved it very well. They identified space brilliantly with nice little short passes, and they always seemed to get out on the outside of Auckland. And you know, when you've got some real pace in your back three, Coombs, Fameling, Simpkinson, and Tapaia Cook-Savage, who's just so good on with his footwork, and you've got Damien McKenzie and Xavier Rowe, who I thought outplayed their opposites quite easily. But you know, that's on the back of a pack that just worked really, really hard, and right to the core of that was probably Reece Marshall at hooker, who just he seemed like the everywhere man in this game. And you know, speaking of hookers, and we'll get to that, it really was a weekend for hookers.
It was. Let's listen to Ross Filippo post game, and then we will have, after that, I've got a chat with two players, including one of those speedsters, and a player also scoring his debut try. We'll kick off first with Ross Filippo, the head coach of Waikato.
Here we are after Waikato versus Auckland FC with head coach of Waikato. Ross, so what were your initial takeaways or thoughts from that game?
I thought, you know, overall it was I was really happy with the performance of the guys. We'd felt like in weeks coming into this game that, you know, we'd been doing some things really well with the ball, but we'd kind of been stuttering along. Today was the first time that I probably saw a flow appear amongst the boys with the ball in hand. There were times where things probably got a little bit loose, and we probably needed to show a bit more composure and be a bit more direct, and then just build a couple of phases. But you know, you could see the team were making a lot of opportunities. I guess the work on for us now is to temper that with, you know, a bit of composure, and then also probably look at finishing off a number of those opportunities that we created.
Yeah, I mean, some great game line breaks. I mean, you went close even before the first penalty, but that last ball didn't seem to go away. They seemed to be, perhaps over enthusiasm, a few passes get hit into grass in that first half.
Yeah.
And then also just letting them back in every time after you scored. Your restarts perhaps were a little bit concerned.
We didn't quite nail that part of the field tonight. And whether that was through kickoff receipts or when we had lineouts in our half, and we had a couple of just small errors. But it definitely put the pressure back on us. You know, we'll definitely make sure that we tidy that up before next week, because it was all created through our own kind of mistakes. So the boys are really good at filtering through their game and being honest around what went well and what didn't. And, you know, I've got a dedicated bunch that are really kind of invested in getting better each week.
So you're still you managed to maintain that record of being the only undefeated team so far this season. So congratulations on that. With this being a storm week with Manawatu on Wednesday, how did that sort of alter selection? Have you had to rest some players? I mean, how have you sort of managed that? County's Manawatu tomorrow so you've got Southland on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna have to make sure that we first see what the wash up of bodies is tomorrow. We've got a strategy that we're going to apply for the storm week, and there's, I guess, it's my first time doing it as a coach. we've had a bit of feedback from other people who have done storm weeks in the past, so we've just tried to see what's going to really be best for our group. There probably will be a bit of rotation of personnel, but we just still want to make sure that we're putting out a cohesive group that's competitive.
Yeah, one of the things I've heard from players and even some coaches that actually they enjoy storm weeks because there means less training, actually more playing, and you come into this to play. Is there that kind of feel among the players?
Yeah, you kind of just like it's almost like an NBA player, isn't it? You know, you play Monday, play Wednesday, and you might slip in one training or something in between, but it's a bit lighter and it's more focused around just on preparing the body to play again.
Well, congratulations on the win. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me after the game, and I'll see you again
Always.
On Wednesday.
Cheers. Thank you, mate.
So interesting one there, and I think something you'll see when I talk to some coaches after the Counties Manawatu game as well is that quite a lot of these coaches haven't done storm weeks before as coaches, and it's one of the things that you kind of forget that it's only been about two seasons and we haven't had them. But in those two seasons, a lot of the institutional knowledge around how to deal with those storm weeks has disappeared. So, interesting one around that. Next up, one of those speedsters then, Daniel Simkinson, who is having a cracking season this year. I think it's his second season, but obviously last year, a bit of a change up.
After Waikato versus Auckland in the NPC with a big win for Waikato. Look, how are you finding your second season? You got obviously a couple of starts last year, but this year you've nailed yourself a starting role. That 11 jersey is yours. How are you finding that?
Yeah, I'm just loving the footy at the moment. The boys are making it real easy, just backing me out there, and yeah, it's good fun.
It's good fun, yeah. And it must be good fun because you've got some lovely rampaging runs. I haven't actually seen Daniel Simkinson here for Waikato. You got some great breaks down that left side, and then also you came off your wing to the other side, showing you got plenty of work rate to stroll over for the first try as well.
Yeah, it felt bad for Coombs. Yeah, stole his try, but nah, it was just there in the moment. So yeah.
And coming off club rugby into this way, obviously I'm assuming you got some sort of job at the same time as doing club rugby. How is it that transition from being sort of part time to sort of kind of trying to be full time for the sort of 12 or so weeks of NPC? How are you finding that?
Yeah, no, it's good. I got a pretty good boss who's pretty lenient for letting me off work, and he just made it so much easier to if I need to get calling, then I can just come on straight away, no questions asked, and yeah. So as I said, coming here, all the boys are so helpful, so it makes it so much more easier.
And you're knocking around with players like Damon McKenzie and Liam Messam, who have got a little bit of experience.
Yeah.
How have you found sort of learning off them and how to be, I guess, transition from just being a rugby player to being a professional rugby player?
You know, it's good, just with those boys, just being a sponge and learning as much as I can. I'm pretty sure Hunger actually debuted when I was one, so... To be here playing with them now, it's pretty special, and yeah, like with Damo as well, it's good just having them around.
So there you go, playing with players who are old enough to be his dad. talking of sort of family and stuff, are you related to a certain Welsh player, Brett Simkinson?
Yeah, he's actually my uncle, my dad's brother, so he lives over in Papamoa and works over there, yeah.
Okay, so rugby runs through the family then, and there, because played for Wales... some issues as to kind of where his grandparents were born or not born, but we won't go into that with you there. So your dad, you're from a rugby family?
Yeah, well, they all grew up playing rugby up in Thames Valley, and yeah, it's kind of just what we do. Me and my brother playing rugby on the farm since we were kids, and yeah, it's the way.
There you go, and he's been nicked. He should be playing for the Swamp Foxes. That's the see. There we go. Being obviously from Waihee here, and myself. So, thanks for your time. It's great seeing you running around and enjoying yourself so much on the pitch. And good luck for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, cheers. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So someone from a club family, farming family, as well. So yes, get the like the Barretts. Get the get the rugby post up in the paddock. And running around with his brother, pretending to be an All Black, and slowly making his way up into through the professional game season.
Yeah, listen, and boy, he's got a little bit of speed as well, eh? You know, you saw him in a little bit of open territory, and we know that Coombs Fabling is quick, and you're throwing the snappy footwork of Tapia Cook-Savage, and man, I
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, they potentially look stronger than they were last year and even more impressive. You know, both those wingers are keeping Mosesi Dawai, who was a regular feature in this Waikato team last year. So, man, looking good, you know. Only Canterbury's picked up more points with, but they have Canterbury have got a game in hand, so Waikato are looking good, unbeaten and only unbeaten this team this season, like you say, with that draw and
sitting on draw in the opening round. That's right. Yep.
Sitting on 25 points, looking good, mate.
And finally, we have a very quick listen to Patrick McCurran, who was another young guy in his debut season, and also picked up his debut meat pie.
Patrick McCurran, after Waikato versus Auckland in the MPC, you got on there today. Obviously, good to get on the pitch when your team's up and leading. But not only that, you decided to grab yourself a meat pie as well.
Yeah, exactly. Always good when the boys got momentum, dominant on attack. Good to slot in at a nice time, and then just running a line off to Paya, who had a great game. So happy to get my first try.
And how are you finding playing at MPC level with players running alongside players like Dane McKenzie, Liam Messam, who have got a few All Blacks caps here and there, and yourself, I guess, coming off the back of club rugby. How are you finding it?
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty surreal just having those big names, legends of the game, out next year playing with you, and then me coming from club rugby, bit of a step up, but. Those boys who have played and experienced have been really supportive of me, so I'm glad for all that support and happy to be playing beside them.
And learning rugby skills, but also sort of strength and conditioning skills. Are you learning a lot about how to prepare your body, how to sort of relax or recover during the week?
Yes, there's a big emphasis on the recovery, nutrition, and the gym stuff. So definitely learning a lot of the trainers on optimal training regimes and things like that, learning different exercises and ways to get me ready and best in shape for each game.
And how are you finding the obviously the physicality will be a step up, so how are you finding all the bumps and bruises and the equivalent of a 60 mile an hour car crash collisions?
That's the sort of stuff I enjoy and relish, and I think it's part of my strength is in around that tackle area, so something I do enjoy. Always sore the day after, but all part of it, so happy.
That's fantastic to hear, folks. If you haven't read my, I did a week in the life of a rugby player, and basically seem to spend about 4 days recovering and 3 days sort of, or 2 days training ahead of actually paying, because it is such a collision sport. But you've got a game now on Wednesday, so have you thought about how that's going to mess things up, being a storm week and having playing sort of Friday, Wednesday, and then next weekend as well?
Yeah, we've had a wee chat about it, trying to focus on game by game, but we know that there's two games pretty close to each other, well, three games, including the Otago one, so recover well, really, starting tonight, starting post-game, so the trainers will sort us out, and they've got a schedule, so we know what to do, really, we just show up.
Just show up and not too many beers tonight to celebrate because of the other game coming up.
Exactly.
It's great to see you having a smile on your face and running around there. I guess also having one draw, and I think it's five or six wins now on the bounce is a nice way to go about the season as well, having not been beaten yet.
Yeah, exactly. Always nice to keep winning, keep getting those Ws, playing pretty well. So as long as we can keep going each game, that's all we're after. So it's all about end of the season, so we just need to keep improving and getting better.
Yep, keep the eye on the prize. It's all about finals footy, and my thing's all going wobbly, and I can't get myself back on screen. But there we go. So thank you so much for your time. It's great to see you smile, and I'll be back here to watch you guys on Wednesday when you take on Southland.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Yeah, very impressed with how he talked in that one for a young player who hasn't had any media experience. He was very eloquent. So yeah, so good to see the young players smiling and enjoying the rugby there.
Yeah, but I thought he was very thoughtful about the way he, you know, each question you dished up to him. He really, really thought long and hard about it, and you can just see that he's just loving being around these guys. And listen, just standing beside you, he's not the biggest loose forward you'd ever see, but boy, he certainly puts his body about, doesn't he?
Yep, and with long flowing red locks. A bit of Tom Robinson about him, maybe. But you say not quite as tall. We won't see him in the row, I don't think. As a Lucy. Moving on then, Ranfurly Shield on Saturday with Hawke's Bay retaining the Shield, beating Southland 69-24. Southland with that Ranfurly Shield game, then with Waikato coming up as a midweek game, and then also playing Bay of Plenty away. The following week. So three away games on the bounce for their Storm week, really making it tough for the boys down there in Southland. Scott said it's going to be a tough week for the Stags. Perhaps a little overly tough, Stephen.
Yeah. You know, listen, when you do have a Storm week, or when you do meet these tough encounters, having depth in specific areas is very, very important. And listen, the Stags started pretty well in the Shield Challenge. They defended really, really well, I thought, in the first several minutes, and then they got an opportunity to score, and they took it straight away. But boy, I think that's about the only time they actually led in the game, because from there on out, Hawke's Bay got their game rolling. And the thing that basically really, really killed Southland is just this offloading ability that Hawke's Bay seem to have at the moment, and they can really hurt you from anywhere on the paddock. And even their forwards are really, really good ball players, and it's going to take some sort of team to knock them off. I don't know if any team is capable of beating them certainly at home. We know that they're probably a bit vulnerable when they go on the road, but you can see that Shield means a whole heck to them. Southland at halftime, 24-17. They might have thought they were a bit of a chance, but in reality, Paul, I think we probably all knew what was coming with the Hawke's Bay with the wind behind them in the second half. You basically knew they'd come out firing, and they took that game away from Southland very, very quickly.
Yeah, so Hawke's Bay have got Wellington and Tasman as their final two Shield defences. Obviously, the Tasman on the assumption that they do defend against Wellington. But look, they got the big win this time, but they know how to grind it out. 25-23 against North Harbour, 33-32 against Counties. They just know how to win a game, even when it gets close at home. So, you just say, very hard to see a Wellington and Tasman teams, two teams not travelling great this year. Wellington better than Tasman, not one of the top teams coming to town, not like a Waikato or something like that, where you could say, oh, that's going to be a tasty one. Two sides at Hawke's Bay will feel confident they can defend the Shield against the Southland. Look, three games, a Storm week where all three of your games are away, all three of the games are in the Upper North Island. A bit of a nightmare for them. Isn't Upper North Island, but all of them in the North Island. So all long journeys, having to go home, come back some of the boys have to go back to work, and then expect them to do these three long trips for what is one of the smaller provinces, I think is bad scheduling by New Zealand Rugby. So I think they've got that one wrong. And they're making some of the smaller provinces go through some very tough times. And we saw that with Manawatu in the opening week, where they were at home to Canterbury. Then they had Canterbury, Auckland, and then North Harbour. So two of the historically biggest teams in the competition. Now, admittedly, they were at home, which helped them from that point of view. But even so, to give the smaller provinces a chance or a more competitive chance, you want competitive games. And I'm not sure the scheduling has really helped them this year. Moving on to that, North Harbour versus Bay of Plenty. I was driving during this one, so I must admit I've not seen it. Cracking win for Bay of Plenty, 34-48. Harbour aside, they've been traveling pretty well. I mean, three wins, three losses going into this one. Bay of Plenty with three wins and two losses going into this one. So two teams you thought were going to be pretty competitive and close, and 14-point win or a 2-score win there for Bay of Plenty over Harbour. A pretty high scoring one. I heard that Harbour perhaps too many errors and perhaps too reliant on an attacking back three to score miracle tries and to pull them out of the fire.
Yeah, Paul, they were relying on a lot of individual brilliance. And listen, in a losing effort, Mark Talia was just absolutely fantastic, and he was popping up all over the place in the forwards, doing pick and goes. He was doing his darndest to try and get them over the line. Unfortunately, they in this game was well and truly over by half time. Even though Bryn Gatlin kicked a penalty early in the second half at 24-10, Bay of Plenty looked the better team. They just looked more connected, doing the team thing. And the thing, you know, once again, their senior players all stood up. Kurt Eklund, who scored a hat trick of tries, and of course, you know, you'd think, geez, is he the first hooker to score three tries this weekend? Well, he wasn't, because Tyrone Thompson scored three for Hawke's Bay in the previous Shield Challenge. So, like we said before, it was a weekend for the hookers, and they really were outstanding. You know, there were some real eye-catching performances. None more than Kurt Eklund's. Justin Sangster just seems to be going from strength to strength at lock. In fact, Selby Rickett, their set piece was way better than Harbour's. Harbour at set piece line out actually struggled, although they probably, Harbour at times had maybe an edge at scrum time, but it kind of evened itself out. Make no mistake, this is a very, very good Bay of Plenty team, and if they keep trending in this direction, they'll be going down the right way. Listen, another guys to have a good game. Yeah, Sean Stevenson, once again, you see this guy's vast array of skills, and I just wonder, I do wonder how long he'll stick around in New Zealand rugby, with international rugby seemingly, if you look at some of the players that are the roadblock that he's got in front of him in that number 15 jersey, especially at All Black level. I just wonder if there's too many seasons left for Sean Stevenson in New Zealand.
Yeah, I have to say. I mean, look, some players, and it comes down to personal choices whether you want to go overseas or not, how much you want to stay around family and things in New Zealand, and how much is that important to you compared to how much necessary dollar figures are. Important to you. So we'll see how he goes. But you say, yeah, someone who I think has come on leaps and bounds this year. We saw him for the Maori All Blacks play cracking well as well, which will have, as you say, which would have been a good shot window for him to European or Northern Hemisphere clubs, because they would have watched Maori All Blacks play Ireland, whereas they might not have watched them play Fiji or some of the other sides, for example, and therefore. He's put himself out nicely into that shop window this season. Final game on Saturday was Counties versus Manawatu. Counties winning this one 41-33 in the end. Again, another game that was pretty much won and lost in the first half, really. Manawatu, plenty of opportunities in that first half hour, and then gave up three tries in 10 minutes before halftime. Sure, they pulled one back after the hooter, to go into halftime a bit closer, but really that those 10 minutes were all it took for firing Counties to really pull away. That put them 33-10 up, went in 33-14 at half time, and yeah, I'd say it was over by that point. Let's hear from both of the head coaches. First off, we will hear from the Pick Steelers head coach, Rion Graham, and then we'll hear from Peter Russell from Manawa to Turbos. I've got to put it up on the wrong place. It's coming. Technical issues again, or user issues on technical issues, folks. He says, so first up, we'll hear from Rion, who I've had a chat to a couple of times recently, so hopefully you've heard from Rion.
Here we are after Counties versus Manawa 2 with the Counties head coach, Rion. In that first half, things seem to really click, and you managed to put some good points on the board. That 10 minutes before half-time, must be very happy with how the boys are playing.
Yeah, really, really happy that first half. We used the ball well, and we've been trying to do that a fair bit this season, and it was starting to, as you say, starting to click, which was real pleasing.
And also defensively, because Manawa 2 had the opportunity that first half, but you managed to always strip the ball or get the turnover at the right time just to stop their momentum and to drag it back. So great first half. But second half, it kind of all, well, that shape and the attack shape seemed to disappear. What kind of happened?
Yeah, the old cliche, game of two halves. Well, look, we'll have to have a good review of the video and see what areas we need to improve on there. I think we battled with the territory game in that second half a little bit. Handling errors, too many penalties, so our discipline sort of let us down a wee bit, and just kept them in the hunt. Good to get the 5 points, but heaps to work on.
Yeah, and with a couple of players perhaps had sort of breakout games. Benji on the wing there, his second season, obviously last season, not much, obviously didn't get much game time because of how it was. But yeah, he had a cracking half or game until his injury.
Yeah, Benji played really well. Benji, Jared Page, they really stepped up on the attack in that first half. Sean Reedy's just a workhorse. He was strong again. So, yeah, some good performances out there.
Putting Cameron Roygaard, known as a nine, going out on the wing. That's a bit of a strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, just looking at our backs stocks at the moment, and looking at Plan Bs and Plan Cs as we move forward in case we get some injuries. So, he trained out there a little bit during the week. Knows all the plays from out there. So. And it was good to see him dot one down in the corner.
So yes, yeah, good to get the 5 points. I think that puts on the same points now as Otago. You also got your Storm week coming up as well. So it's going to be a real busy end to the regular season for you guys.
Yeah, four games in I think what is it? Four games in 2.5 or 3 weeks. So really busy. But the boys are up for it. They've been training really hard, training well. They always respond to the work-ons that we put in throughout the week, so no doubt they'll be doing the same this week.
So is this your first time managing a team in a Storm week, having to try and fit three games into a week?
Yep. So we've been training pretty hard during the week, so the game in the middle of the week is probably been like our trainings have been this throughout the season. So the boys should be used to it, backing up. We'll be pretty easy on them. On the days off.
Well, when we chatted with Andy Farrell and Bundiaki after the Maori game, he said that actually the players like having an extra game because it means they don't have to train. So I think the players will be happy if the coaches maybe not so much. But thank you so much for your time.
All right, mate.
Cracking win, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. After Counties versus Manawa 2 with Peter Russell, the head coach of Manawa 2. Look, in that first half, obviously it's never nice to concede a try straight away, but your guys came back and really put some good pressure in that first half hour, and got really close to a number of tries, but just kept turning it over at the wrong time, really.
Yeah, you're right. I think the first couple of minutes didn't help. You know, too many mistakes, and then just didn't put enough pressure on the opposition. You know, off the Counties, and they basically let them off the hook in that 15 minutes.
Yep.
You know, we had a lot of possession and territory, and they were conceding a lot of penalties, and we should have capitalised on those.
Yeah, and then unfortunately it seemed to all sort of unravel in that 10 minutes just before half time, where they got a number of tries, and that's kind of where they pull away. It's been a tough season. Is that just a lack of confidence in the players and getting a bit tired?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just a couple of wrong options in there. We took we missed a line out, a couple of crucial line outs going into the half time. We had them under pressure, we just turned possession over. So those things we need to fix up pretty quickly before next week. And as you know, it does come around pretty quickly.
Yep, and then in the second half, though, it was again a much closer affair, and perhaps that lacks a little bit of structure from both teams, though.
Yeah, both teams sort of were toing and froing. You know, 20 minutes before, I think we scored first, and yep. Then into the game, and then a couple of penalties later on. So those things we need to capitalise on and take control of the game. And we see that at half time, playing down the right end of the field, which we started well with. But we gave away a couple of turnover possessions, and up the other end we went.
And it's been a tough season, clearly for Manawatu too. Wasn't helped by starting off with a storm week straight away, but I guess it now means towards the end of the season you get full preparation time between games. So you're looking forward to the last sort of three games?
Yeah, well, this is a short turnaround for us coming up to this week coming up, so we're not getting any respite there. But we just got to carry on. It's the competition, and everyone has to go through it. But at the end of the day, you know, we've just got to deal with what we have and the players that we have.
And on that note, how was the club competition down in Manawatu this year in the Prem's, and that sort of pool of players you had available to select from?
We're reliant on those players that are coming back from Super Rugby and international as well. So, you know, they don't get to play much club rugby, as it were. But at the end of the day, you know, we've got a wider group that's training well. Being very young, you can saw a few of those young boys come on tonight. And it's just, they've got to learn the trade and learn pretty quickly.
Yep. And we heard that, that Plumtree had been coming up and helping out. Has he still managed to sort of come and get some good training with the guys then?
Yeah, he's been there for the last 3 weeks. And, you know, you saw a little glimpse of it tonight, but he wouldn't be too happy with a few of the missed tackles. But, you know, that's individual. You know, that's the attitude that you need at this level in this competition. You've got to make your tackles.
Yeah, no, it's great credit to him that he's stepped up and helped you guys out after losing his role. It's fantastic to see a guy who clearly loves his rugby as well. So thank you so much for your time. Good luck for the rest of the season. And cheers.
Thank you.
So, yeah, so interesting one there when I asked him about the depth or the available players from club rugby. And then talk about there about players coming back from Super International needed. I guess that's going to lead to a bigger question that we'll answer. Well, I think Steve and I need to get Bo and a couple of others around a few cameras and ask, what is NPC? Is it supposed to be rep rugby or representative rugby, or is it supposed to be, or is it a professional pathways and about winning and trying to be professional clubs? What is the balance there around those sort of things? So I think interesting there, because talking to the counties, basically they were like, there was a big push there that you had to play club rugby in the counties competition, or you weren't involved, or except for Super Rugby players, obviously, who can't play, then you had to be associated with a local club. So, interesting there. I think a topic for another evening as we're running long, Stephen. But thoughts from here from the two head coaches?
Oh, listen, I think they both summed it up perfectly. You know, just unfortunately for Manawatu, just that set piece lineout, because they showed when they could string things together and put ball in hand, they are a good side. You know, even Drew Wild at the back, he's probably been one of their better backs during the season, and he always stood out, man. I thought that was a really, really strong game. Can you imagine somebody like Tima Whaianuku in a with the greatest of respect to the Turbos in another team, he would be amazing. Braden Losse in a on the back of a pack that's going forward all the time with a lot of ball. These guys would actually cause a heck of a lot of damage. And even, you know, Brett Cameron is a tidy player. So they have got some, despite their problems within the union, let's just hope that they don't make too many changes. I'd like to see them keep Peter Russell, because he's actually a good coach, but it's fair to say
that to be competitive, because you're never going to fix your club, your club competition in a hurry, that they may have to go to market to be far more competitive.
Yeah. So a couple of last interviews. A player who I think has impressed us a lot across Super Rugby and now even more so in MPC is Cameron Roygaard, who I think is an up-and-coming scrum half in the New Zealand system. So first we'll hear from him. And then also I had a chat with Lionel Evans, a club stalwart down there in counties on his debut. We think he's cap number 805, but with these organisations that go back over 100 years, some of the record keeping hasn't been great at times. So trying to remember, so try and get those numbers exactly right. But yeah, we'll have a quick, so let's just hear from Cameron, who I said, an up-and-coming player I think we'll see hear a lot more of. And then from the debutant.
Here we are at after counties versus Manitou with Cameron Roygaard. You had a cracking game there. First off, you start at nine, then you're shoved out on the wing and get a nice try in the corner. This winger's malarkey is kind of easy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it was a bit of fun out there, eh? No, it was awesome first half from the boys, and then it was cool to get opportunity on the wing. So a bit of freedom I'm probably not used to being out there so much, but no, it was awesome fun. It's good effort from the boys, proud of the boys. Sort of game of two halves, one of those things, but it's good to get the win.
Yeah, in that first half, a lot of what you guys have been working on seemed to be coming off. You're kind of getting your backs moves really well. You know, Benji was making some great breaks on the outside. Jared Page, one of his best games as well for you guys. You really got your backs moving, didn't you?
Yeah, we put a lot of emphasis this week on our attack and making sure we do pull trigger and back ourselves. And I think that showed, especially in that first 40. And like you said, Pagey was getting lots of time and space, and that's when he's at his best. So, no, it was awesome.
And how have you enjoyed this season? And coming off the back of, obviously, we've been down there with the Hurricanes and perhaps not getting as much game time as you wanted, but obviously training full-time. How have you found coming into an MPC season with that kind of baseline of fitness and training?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's been really good, even though I wasn't getting as much game time as I probably would have hoped, but I was getting lots of valuable experience, which I was able to transfer into this season. And, like you said, like getting the game time like I'm getting this season, it's really awesome. And, I find myself just having fun, enjoying it, and that's the main goal for me. So yeah, no, it's awesome.
Not just having fun, but now being one of the one of the kind of leaders of the group as well, and enjoying that extra responsibility of you're owning that nine jersey, and kind of leading the team or bossing the team around a bit.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome challenge. When Rion talked to me about that at the start of the year, it was pretty daunting, but it's an awesome challenge, and like there's lots of other leaders that pretty awesome as well to make. You know, make it a team effort. So yeah, no, it's really good, really good group.
Good. And then yeah, second half, you say you kind of lost your shape a bit, didn't you? So it seemed to be all going a bit scrappy, and things just weren't clicking in that second half. And does it number of personnel change? Obviously, you going out on the wing, unfamiliar position, all that kind of tied into it. You think?
I'm not sure. Probably have to look back and review on that. But we found ourselves losing our momentum there, and we couldn't quite get it back. It was probably quite lucky that we actually did get that try towards the end there to sort of seal that win. But Manawatu, we knew they were a team that would play for the full 80. Like, we've seen it for multiple weeks, regardless of the scoreline. So, yeah, it's credit to them. Like, they're still a good side regardless. And,
Well, cracking season for you. And thank you so much for your time. And good luck the rest of the season.
Cheers, thank you.
Cheers. Here we are after counties versus Manitou with Lionel, who has made his debut and is breathing rather heavily. Got more tired by the post match warm down than actually the game.
Yeah, but we love it, eh?
And it's your first experience of MPC rugby. How did you find it? How do you find the step up with all, I guess, the extra power in the scrum or less time and extra pace? How was it for you?
The adrenaline's going, eh? Still little shakes, but yeah, the boys certainly helped me out a bit, just, you know, keep me in the zone.
And we saw that, you got your mitts on the ball as well, and went very close to that try there. Yeah. Where you kind of, sorry, oh boy, come on, it's my debut, I should be allowed to get this try. Come on, let me over.
Oh, meat pie would have been good, but, you know, a try is a try for the team.
And how you found the step up from club rugby to MPC, the extra level of training, all that kind of stuff? Is it how are you enjoying that change?
Intensity is there though. Eh? But the fitness coach keeps me in check.
As we can see with the heavy breathing, because they've been running up and down to the guys on the bench get to have to do a little bit of extra afterwards to make sure they've done the full workload. Because if you come on after 5 minutes, it would have been a bit of a workout, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So you want to get on as soon as you can.
Absolutely. So congratulations on your debut. It's great to see you're grinning and enjoying it so much. And in the background, folks, that's all his family who have come out to support him as well. So it's great to see a local club boy get really repping his province. So thank you for your time and well done.
Honoured to be here.
Cheers.
Not quite as eloquent as perhaps down in Waikato, but I guess something that you won't see unless you're at a game is the guys who are on the bench end up having to run shuttles and do a full workout post game if they've not had a chunk of game time, because you know obviously they can't overload you in case you have to come off after 5 minutes, but you do need to get through your to keep fit for the rest. And yeah, he was. As you say, sweating and a bit out of breath at post-game workout.
Paul, what I loved about that interview is I didn't think he really cared whether he scored a try or not. He just looked like a guy that was, man, I'm just happy to be at this level and amongst it. He just, you couldn't take the, I think he had the same smile on his face throughout the whole interview. And that was classic. That was gold, Paul. Very well done.
Yeah, we only got 10 minutes, but hey, it's 10 minutes and no one can ever take away from them, as you say, there in that one. So well done to County for that one. We've overrun, so we're going to run through these last games pretty quickly. Tasman beat Taranaki 38-27. Look, two struggling teams. A much needed win for Tasman there. Wellington saw off Otago 32-26. That was a key one in that pool, as Wellington there four climb up to third ahead of Otago in fifth now and open up a 7-point gap, which will help them in their quest for finals rugby. And the final game of the weekend saw Canterbury comfortably beat Northland 46-17. Look, Northland really have been impressing this season, but up against the Canterbury side, who Northland's form meant they were not going to be underestimated, and also Northland having to change a few players up unsurprising perhaps really that scoreline, and Northland will live to fight another day. They still sit third in their pool on 18 points, but both North Harbour and Tasman sit just 1 point behind them. But Northland do have their storm week coming up, so they do have an extra game in hand over those two. So. Even with that result, finals footy looking on the cards for Northland.
Yeah, an interesting contest. Speaking of only a point or so between them, interesting contest coming up this Sunday. It's the final game of the round. North Harbour play Northland in Whangarei, and I will be there. Hopefully I'll have most of my voice back by then as well. So that could define their season, to be brutally honest, to the point where... obviously, they've still got their storm week to go. They've gotten an away game against Tasman, but they, like I say, they do have that game in hand, and a win will send them on their way to making the quarterfinals. Those other two games, interesting games.
Want to think about the North one. That's their final game at Seminoff Stadium as well. So, folks, get along to that one, because their game against Northland Manawatu 2 has been moved, so the pitch can be prepared for the Women's Rugby World Cup. So. Moved to
Kaikohe. That's where they played. I think it was last year before. Beg your pardon, 2020 COVID year. They actually moved the game when there were renovations being done to Seminoff Stadium in Whangarei. It was moved to Kaikohe. They played Waikato. They've got 100% record there, so they might be happy to take that game against Manawatu up there as well. So yeah, an interesting weekend, Paul, but I've got to say most of the games were pretty one-sided the weekend. Probably not as close, you know. I think probably the average winning margin would have been, what, 10 to 15 points in every game, if you averaged it out. Coffee obviously might be a bit wider with the two heavy defeats of both maybe Northland and I think Southland pretty well beaten. But listen, something I just quickly want to
bring up before we actually close the show up. Of course, I don't know whether it was the back end of this round or the front end of the round, which saw the Wellington-Tasman game last Wednesday night, and we saw a very controversial decision. We saw a Wellington win in that particular game, but we actually saw a very, very controversial decision that was made by the TMO, where he awarded a try where it clearly showed that the Connor Garden Bishop, who actually scored the try, was basically out. Now, there's been a lot of talk on the social network with regards to that decision, because you can imagine there's been a lot of a comment by myself included, and you know, a lot of people out there giving the TMO a bit of advice that he should head off to the local Specsavers and have a look, because it was clearly out. Now, there's been a little bit of a response from the Tasman CEO, Lyndon Brain. He's basically came out and said the TMO is probably the person that's most disappointed himself, and sort of has backed the TMO Corey Eggers up, saying that he's been a TMO for over 4 years, and there were some mitigating circumstances why the correct decision wasn't made. Now, obviously, a lot of people have just said, well, really? We all saw the pictures. He got it wrong. But interestingly enough, Kane Hames has basically come out and basically said, listen, Corey isn't a paid TMO. Local referees perform this every game, and he has done this role for years without a mishap. There is little or no time for training provided. Secondly, there was no big screen where the whole refereeing team could look at the pitches together and decide. He had to make a decision on his own. This hardly happens at any professional game in New Zealand. Thirdly, he was asked to look at the line, and he made the mistake of looking only at the line without checking the feet and the grounding. On top of this, if the commentary team hadn't pointed this out, how many people in Hames' eyes would have actually noticed that? Now, he's basically come out in support of Corey. He obviously knows him. He's been a referee himself. And he's kind of irked that that people have come out and even named the TMO. I must admit, in my comments, I didn't name the TMO. I was just disappointed that a decision that looked so obvious wasn't done about it. Now, Kane has basically come out and said a lot of the comments were totally uninformed. Well, listen, if it isn't this TMO's fault, Paul, is this on New Zealand Rugby for not having the right resources there to actually help these guys out to make a decision? Because we've been to most grounds, and you and I, there's always a monitor down by the field, which the referee could go and have a look as well. Now, this is probably as simple as the TMO having an RT directly, and I assume he'd have direct communication to the referee to get that right decision.
So there we go. So the TMO will have direct communication to the referee. Yes, he does. Now, in a lot of cases, he is by the side of the pitch. So if we're looking at, say, a ground such as Navigation Home Stadium, for counties, he's by the side of the pitch, as he would be, say, at a Tauranga Domain, which would be a Bay of Plenty game. Now, if he's at an Auckland game or at a Waikato, so at Eden Park or FNG Stadium, he isn't by the pitch. He is up in the stands, is in a room with the timekeeper. Now, should you allow the referee, when there isn't a big screen, to go and look at the small screen? Maybe. But then that creates a different situation for some games as to others, where he can, where so in some games he can go and talk to the, they can talk, have a chat next to each other by the pitch. In other games, he can't do it; has to do it by radio. So do you say you're only allowed to talk about radio, so it's consistent across the games or not? I'm not sure. So some of those things, yes, some of the provincial grounds do not have the proper facilities for a professional game. Let's be blunt. Seminole Stadium up in Northland, for example, has only the last couple of years has had a big screen. Some years it hasn't had a big screen up there. Now it's a temporary one that comes in on a truck, but at least there is one there. So Navigation Homes doesn't have a big screen, but Bay of Plenty does. So the standard of facilities isn't consistent, and could do with being stepped up, definitely. the standard of support for the this idea that TMOs don't get any training, that's on New Zealand rugby, and they need to get training and have better support. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, and so for me, this is on the New Zealand Rugby Football Union. If you you want to take all these anomalies out of the situation, and for my way of thinking, they've actually opened this can of worms up themselves. Of course, you know, the TMO is looking like the bad guy at the minute, and you know, and Kane Hames, credit to him, has come out and rightfully defended the TMO on this. But you know, what we're asking for is supporters, you know, people who pay these subscriptions. They people want a little bit of accuracy here, Paul. And I don't think that's a hell of a lot to ask for, because you know, we see international games and we constantly hear that chatter from the referee and the TMO. Oh, check on that, check on that. If we want to show that we are fully professional and basically engaging the required needs for the spectators, for the players themselves that are watching the game, because I look back at a lot of the games the weekend, and the number of forward passes I saw were just absolutely forward passes, crooked throw-ins at line out time. You know, those are the sort of things that a TMO who's watching that live can basically check on, and if it means stopping the play, to heck with it, go back and check on it. Either that, I don't think you want to be in the, excuse the French, half ass. You're either in their boots and all, or not at all. We go back to relying on the naked eye, and we'll probably have a lot more to talk about. But hey, I know we've gone well over tonight.
We have gone over, and we probably should discuss the TMO again at another time. The facilities for the TMOs are definitely not consistent. So the ability for a TMO at someone like Navigation Homes or Tauranga is much less than at FMG Stadium, where he has got a couple of screens and he's got multiple cameras that you can see, whereas at those other grounds, he only has one screen. So you are right. It is half-assed in those ones. They don't have the proper facilities that they should have.
And make no mistake, this irks the hell out of the coaches. And, you know, in a lot of games and in key moments, it can make a real, real big difference. I was going to talk about the deliberate knockdown, but we could be here for another hour, mate. So I better let you sign off.
Well, so Scott Donaldson does ask us, should teams contest defensive lineouts, or what is the answer to stopping all these lineout drives to the hookers? This is something that's been in the game for 5, 6, 7 years, maybe. I mean, David Pocock, for example, you could pretty much put your money on him scoring a try every game and with a TAB and make a nice little profit for the year. So, look, it's nothing new. I think teams have tried different things and they are struggling. But other teams, for example, I think the Crusaders only allowed one try via a line-out more 1 year. So there are ways of doing it. Is it obvious to us as fans? Not always.
Two things, just to reply to Scott. What I'd like to see, a real good way of stopping it immediately, is to sack it straight away. Even if you actually sack the catcher once he hits the ground, and then even though he's let it off, it just basically means that the referee will probably deem that, yeah, it's gone down straight away, so it's not illegal. But what does get my back up is when it crabs sideways and it's not actually moving forward. To me, the moment it crabs, you're not moving forward, I think you've got to release it. You know, we've seen situations where the ball's sitting at the back of the scrum, the referees are telling the halfbacks to remove the ball. I personally think that's something that they've got to look at.
Yep. Good points there. I'm going to be at Waikato versus Southland on Wednesday night. Don't forget, folks, the All Blacks, Wallabies versus All Blacks, is on Thursday night. It is a midweek Bledisloe Cup game for the first time in living memory. That kickoff is 9:45 New Zealand time. So don't forget that on Thursday night, folks. Don't miss that game. We'll be back on Tuesday next week. Tuesday, not Monday, folks, in our new time slot, Tuesday, 8 p.m. So do join us then. Thank you so much, Stephen, for joining me and for putting up with my inability to turn the sound on, hence I couldn't hear you. And thank you everyone who's joined us in the live chat. It is much appreciated that you do join us, and catch you all next week on Tuesday.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.